Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Rural Routes, the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, we do it Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do when we gather is continue to address the issues between rural and urban America. It is a Tuesday. That means that it is our across the pond version of Rural Route. G.A. Truitt checking in from, it appears to be still in Puerto Rico. Andrew Henderson licking his wounds from Scotland.
Yeah, I mean, a fellow Scot gives away $350 million in 1901, and my family didn't see a dime of it. It's disgusting. But anyway.
Yeah, but think of what all that would amount to now. If you can win the case,
oh yeah,
the penalties and interest would be on that. You won't want to talk to us anymore. You'll be one of those like elitist leftist liberals.
Too
good for us.
For those that might have missed the previous conversation, we're talking about Andrew Carnegie selling his steel empire to J.P. Morgan in 1901 for $450 million in 1901, $450 million, and then proceeds to give away $350 million of that and is supportive of a 100% inheritance tax. That's what we're talking about. He was from Scotland. He made himself wealthy in Pennsylvania and then New York. All right, Andrew, go.
No, I'm just okay. Furious so, with the guy. I'm furious with the guy. I mean, we let him leave and go and live in America. He earns a load of money and then gives it all back. Disgusting. Yeah.
So Jay, is there any one thing that the cattle lobby has worked on more in the history of the cattle business and agriculture than the inheritance tax?
No, it's probably a close tie between that and basic property rights, law, right? Because of that, but not really. No, death taxes, literally are the ingredient that ended as many ranch operations or forced ranch operations. Even as they could see it coming, they knew what was going to happen. It forced a lot of ranching operations into somebody else's hands. And so if you built your entire operation around the basic concept that I'll forego some annual income in exchange for the ability to pass on a livelihood and assets that'll be worth more in the future to my heirs.
You what? The future.
And that gets undermined. You're out. Do what?
Did you say your heiress? Or what did you say? The future to your
heirs. Heirs.
Or heiress, whichever. I know you guys are kind of focused on the queen earlier too, but I mean, we don't have one of those. Oh, we do have Queen Latifah, who's frankly a pretty good actress, right? She's pretty funny, and I don't think she ever won anything from the Golden Globes because they just don't favor.
That was a good link there, wasn't it? Eh? That was a good link there.
Okay, now that you got that out of your system, the interesting thing about Andrew Carnegie is that he was really right. He was very right wing. Yeah. Did not believe in the property tax. Did not believe, and Janelle made the point earlier in our discussion that if we didn't have those other two things, the inheritance tax would look a lot different.
Well, so I don't have the biggest problem with what Andrew Carnegie actually did. I have a huge problem with the way that he wanted it to happen. Listen, if you want to give away all of your wealth at the end of your life, whether it's $10, $10 trillion, I don't actually.
Your decision.
So be it, right?
Yeah.
So be it. Give it away. You can give it to the next door neighbor. You can give it to someone else. And if you want to give it to the federal government, while I think that's completely stupid, the truth of the matter is that's also your choice because it is your property. You earned it. There are a lot of questions about maybe some of the pathways to wealth that Mr. Rockefeller, Carnegie, and J.P. Morgan took at the time. But
I think
other people follow your guidelines. Sports, right?
I think a little Andrew in the back row wants to ask a question, Jay.
He's, go ahead.
Yeah. Actually, I've now realized where, because you know Trent keeps taking us back to this, and I think I've realized why. Is it not right that one Bill or William Gates has been buying up loads and loads of land across America? Yep.
Yeah.
It's not as right as is being reported, but he owns more than the average farmer. He has 242,000 acres. Go ahead.
You counted every one of them. Anyway, so he owns 242,000 acres. But will that acreage come under the inheritance tax that Mr. Carnegie had his fingers into? Will it?
Yeah. Yes. Well,
yeah. It's not just a... It's not just a farm and ranch tax. It's an inheritance tax on his personal wealth, which may be why you'd want to get a divorce to try to hide it from somebody.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
That's what I'm saying. And so she's probably looking at this and thinking, hang on a minute. I need to make sure that he moves some of his assets, because if that day comes soon, he might be leaving it all to the tax man or to the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But Andrew, you're making an assessment here that I'm simply charging down this path of Andrew Carnegie and the inheritance tax because of modern day Bill Gates issues. I'm not. It's a component of it, but I'm trying to impress upon you and everybody listening that there has been nothing. Jay already said this. There's been nothing that eliminated more generational transfer and farms and ranches than, well, two things: inheritance tax and brothers marrying women that can't get along. Those two things cause more farms and ranches to leave their family operation than any other thing on earth.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because the UK, again, not the Queen, but the UK government has been very, very good in recent years on lowering the threshold for inheritance tax. So increasing the threshold for the opposite of what I just said. So we don't pay any inheritance tax until it reaches $500,000. Okay. So they've been lifting the threshold, so you're protected against tax on your property or your wealth up to £500,000. So our Conservative government's been moving that the other way.
And listen, that's headed in the right direction. We went through this from an economic analysis standpoint. So those studies have been done, and they've floated out there decades ago now. And there's really no change in it. Americans for Tax Reform, Conservative Taxpayers Union, a bunch of other groups all kind of keep those on file and put them out on a regular basis. The real answer to this whole thing is to stop taxing events and just tax money as it flows through the system, whatever that happens to be.
I agree.
There's lots of ways to talk about that, but death should not be a taxable event any more than if you sold something that had increased in value. Taxing the fact that you made a profit is the wrong answer. The correct answer is to figure out a way to tax you as you utilize that money. Just putting it in a bank shouldn't in and of itself warrant a taxable event. If so, let's just be consistent and tax, try to attempt to tax everything, which is also stupid.
Go on, your first quarter's finished, Trent. Go on.
Well, I just wanted to know if Jay, in a minute and a half, could summarize what's in the works with the Biden and the removal of the stepped-up basis. Can you do that in a minute and a half?
Yeah, sure. So the Biden proposal is essentially to eliminate step-up in basis. So the increase in value from the time that the generation that is passing away, all that growth used to be largely exempted from the tax, and you just had to do it from a point moving forward. Now they want to eliminate all that so that all the value dating back to whenever. So a guy that bought a piece of property in 1940 and has passed away this year, there would be, however many dollars worth of increase in that land value. That's what you'd be taxed on.
Mm-hmm. And what percentage would you be taxed at?
we'll see what the actual argument ends up being. But, you know, they want to do it at your income rate, at the rate of whatever the income tax is. We have a progressive income tax, so it would be slightly different for everybody
involved. It'd be roughly 40%, would it not?
39.64%, I think, is for most
people. Yeah, but hang on. So isn't that going to open up for people who value these properties? They're gonna be very much in demand from people. Is that not right?
I don't understand that question, nor do I have time to find out until we get back on the other side. Hey, tomorrow's Wednesday, right? Not Lone Creek. Lone Creek's in Lincoln, but also Neogen. It's the Neogen Beef Bash. I'm going to get the opportunity to spend time with all of the employees at Neogen and get a better insight into what's going on in the future of DNA fingerprinting. It's about identifying the genomics, making sure that you have a light to shine it on your future by looking at the genomics present. Get more details about your genomic testing at Neogen.com. We're back with more Rural Route after this. Welcome back. Rural Route, Trent Luce alongside Jay Truitt, Andrew Henderson. I had to cut Andrew off. All right, Andrew, go ahead. You were about to say something as a result of 40% tax basis or more.
When you say the increase in value from, say, 1940 to today, right? So that means that presumably you're not actually selling the property. Somebody has to go out there and value it. So those people are going to become in huge demand, aren't they? Because the one that gives the lowest valuation would be the one that you want to take the valuation from, wouldn't you? Wouldn't he or she?
Mm.
Yeah, we don't. It doesn't really.
That's not that way.
System. You don't get to. You really don't get to self-prescribe what that valuation is, and the IRS will do it for you, whether you like it or not. If you put something ridiculous out there, they're going to do their own valuation, and in the end. This isn't always the case, but in the end, they get to decide which number that they're going to use. I do think that they try to be fair. It's one of the few cases where I think they try to actually find what is the correct answer, but you can, right? And, I mean, we can do the valuations. You can disagree with them, too. I've seen them that were outrageous and didn't make any sense at all. But I listen, back to the point that Trent made almost from, you know, as we enter into this, I was considered one of the four or five key death tax repeal lobbyists in Washington, D.C. for a bunch of years. And so we were the people that got all the phone calls of people trying to tell us what had happened. That's the only reason I say that. I tell you, it's like one of the worst things that I ever went through was to have to listen to all those heart-wrenching stories. And
I can imagine.
And it's over and over and over and over of how people's lives were just turned upside down. Everything that they thought that they were about, everything that they had been about, just gets stripped away because they can't afford to pay. You know, most farming and ranching operations can't afford a 15% tax on the valuation. That's crazy.
Let's just use some basic cowboy arithmetic. So you have a family trying to particularly ranch because we're talking about more acres, and the cattle business, the only real value that any cow-calf operator has achieved is the value of the land. And as it increases in its appraised value, let's say you have a ranch that goes from $400,000 to $1 million, which would be pretty common. But then for your kids to have the ranch in the next generation, they got to pay 40% to the government to inherit the ranch that they then have to try to make work again.
That's $400,000 roughly.
$400,000 right? Just to keep it in the family to the government.
No. And for what? I mean, to what end, right? I mean, again, if they decided at the end of their lives that they wanted to, and this was where I even broke part with my old employers on this issue. If they decide that they want to sell it, right, the kids when they inherit it, I have no compassion for them paying the maximum taxes on that when they realize that actually is income. But what tends to happen is that one member of the family wants to sell, you know, their portion, or they don't want to wait on a calf check every fall. And it, again, between the inheritance taxes itself and those kinds of things that are inevitable to happen at some level or another, you make that farming or ranching operation. And listen, let's be honest. It's not even just farms and ranches. It is the small businesses that at one point in our history, excuse me, lined Main Street from end to end. And we like to blame Walmart or some other big box store or competition for coming in. But the truth is, when that owner died, and whether it was a tire shop or a feed store or anything else, he's getting pounded with that same thing. Well, those small businesses aren't designed. They don't have the margin. They can't just pass the cost along. If they do pass the cost along, now they're not competitive anymore. So you've not only taken out the ranch, you've taken out the entire community in a lot of cases.
It's actually taking out the breadbasket of your future, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Those people, the entrepreneurs in every walk of life who build something, have to then pay a tax which destroys their business, if it's a family business, that doesn't allow them to develop in the future. It's an absolutely stupid way forward. It's absolutely ridiculous.
And we haven't even shown the big picture, because what we've left out of the equation is that before we get to this inheritance tax of 40%, whatever it may be, we pay a huge percentage more. Some people are paying more in taxes each year to own their property, as called a property tax, than it was worth when they bought it.
Right.
But here's the thing, Jen is sharing an example in Hall County. In my county, Sherman County, Nebraska, I can tell you each year from a grass standpoint, just per acre on grass that we graze, $20 an acre a year. The first $105 for every calf produced in the state of Nebraska goes to pay property tax. That's before we have the inheritance tax of 40% at the end.
Right. It's just stupid. So it's a stupid number.
Andrew.
Well, I'm just saying that I can see how ridiculous that is for the future of the people of your country. And also, I mean, you're at the start of it at the moment, because the money you're borrowing as a country at the moment, or purporting to borrow, it's going to be absolutely unbelievably draconian on the future generations of your country. The tax burden is going to be absolutely unbearable. And that's why I want to come back to you. I hear you said earlier, Trent, that and you did as well, Jay, that they're going to be discussing these new laws that they want to pass through Congress to change your voting laws, for example. Can you explain that to me? Because I know that all the federal
I'm sure we're losing Andrew, but Jay, I'm sure he's asking about HR 1.
There's two sides to this. So it's a little bit like a Max Headroom conversation, right? For all of the people that remember that from way back when.
No, I have no idea what you just said. But yeah, go ahead.
Look it up. It's funny. You'll laugh. It reminds you of Joe Biden a little bit. So there's two aspects to this conversation, though, and his question really is kind of pertinent, right? One of them is HR 1, which also has a Senate counterpart, S1. Probably this week or next week, S1, which is the, I don't know what the actual title is. I think voter people count something, blah, 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 some nonsense liberal hang tag. But the truth of the matter, what it is total election reform, and to encourage more participation through ballots, turn elections into a publicly funded activity, even more so than they are today, use taxpayer dollars in a lot of circumstances to fund campaigns, so that Democrats don't have to take time away from regulating us in order to run for re-election, so they can regulate us more. But tied up in the middle of that, right, people like me would tell you here a couple of weeks ago, oh, you don't have to worry about it too much. It's probably going to pass the House, but it won't clear the Senate because we have a 60-vote requirement. Well, there is also a move, right? And it's kind of settled conversation for the moment, that you have to have a 60-vote margin in the United States Senate. Well, they don't have a 60-vote margin to continue discussion on this, the Voting Act in the Senate. But they want to make it a simple majority discussion, right? And they can pass it with a simple majority, but they need 60 votes to actually carry it out in the first place or to even get out on the floor. And over the last couple of days, you've seen the only thing that the president has done, honestly, over the last few days has been trying to bring in members of the Senate, key members of the Senate that really have something that they want and try to figure out how he can con them into becoming that 60 vote margin to do one of two things, get rid of the filibuster altogether. And just go with the simple majority on everything, which would be a disaster, honestly, whether Republicans or Democrats control the body. You just can't give U.S. senators that much power and authority. They'll abuse it for sure. And number two.
Number two will be right when we come back at the start of the second half, Jay Truitt. Arise USA, the Resurrection Tour is now just days away from starting this week on Saturday at Lander County, Nevada. But the real start is in Atlanta, May 20th. Get details at loosetails.blogspot.com. Constitutional Counties, Faith, Family, and Freedom coming to your state. Help us spread the word. Second half of Roll Route. We'll see if we can get Andrew hooked back up after this. Welcome back, everyone. Trent Luce alongside Jay Truitt and I think the little red hat captain of the engine who could, Andrew Henderson. I don't know if he's locked in time or what, but that's a horrible facial pose. I'm going to get him off of there. Oh my goodness, what is going on here? He's gonna be so proud of that image.
The only thing that matters if he'd have been like picking his nose or something, right?
Yeah,
we can right. Treat that in the first. I'm just trying to figure out how to do a screenshot, but I don't even know how to do it on my computer.
Yeah, it can be done. Yeah. Jay, you know, I'm hearing myself whining about these. In inheritance taxes, whining about property taxes, whining about the reform of these election laws, which allows anybody who ever flew over the United States to have a voting right, or more importantly, 25,000 people that never existed to vote. Right. We got to talk about some, what's the bright spot of the day? Commodity prices are still somewhat high.
Yeah. So if you're trying to sell corn, you probably feel like you need to take a vacation to Puerto Rico, right? And hurry up and get it planted in the ground and then just get the heck out of the way, let it grow. So there are some bright spots, right? I mean, we see some things that are happening, especially in rural areas. There's been I would suggest that for the most part, what we may see in some of these job numbers is that rural areas are outpacing urban areas in lower unemployment rates or higher employment. We're seeing some of these rural factory towns that are beginning to pick up speed, right? The energy business took a real hiccup at the end of the week last week when somebody hacked into that pipeline system. It sure would have been nice to have had another one cross in the United States, but it didn't, and so be it, right? The price of oil does drive the economy in a lot of rural areas in America and has a real impact on it, and oil prices are somewhat higher, so that's good. We have raw commodities, resources, and oil. And good grief, if you've bought timber lately, you know that you wish that you could pay for it with Bitcoin or something that you overpaid for, because it's worth more than gold. our the cost of I have an interest in a construction company as well, and our cost on actually building a house is three times.
Wow.
From a material standpoint.
I just have to point this out because I clearly remember, I think it was 95, right, that corn went to $7. And there's such a different feel in the air today, because when corn was $7, and I think it was 95 or 96, everybody was saying, oh, we've reached a new plateau. Finally, people are going to pay for their food. We're going to get paid properly. We'll never be $3 again. And, well, we all know what happened.
Right.
I don't feel that today, Jay. I feel everybody planting corn saying, I got to get it while I can because this thing's going to be bad. And it's just a matter of inflation, because look at what I'm told. You said lumber's up 3%. I'm told that fertilizers are up 3%. I haven't purchased any. Three times, not 3%, three times of what it was. Across the board, all of these inflationary aspects, at what point do we say, ooh, we're in trouble here?
Yeah, I think it's, so remember just even more recently than what you're describing, in the mid-2000s when we saw $6 corn and beans in the teens, what happened to land prices and rental rates? And
my taxes went through the roof. That's what happened.
Right. And on top of that, if you're the poor guy that's trying to figure out how to maybe expand your operation to allow a family member to come in, or if you just needed to add another section of ground somewhere, your cash rent rates to start that transition went through the roof. Right. And crop sharing which used to be kind of a standard, largely just went by the wayside in a big chunk of the real in Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, those states that, really do make up the corner of the corn and bean production in the United States. And the secondary impact is, right, that livestock folks have to buy all that feed. And while we've kind of broken our dependence specifically on corn alone and have gone to feeding more byproducts and more sophisticated rations kind of everywhere that you can, the truth is there is a relationship between the price of corn and everything else in the United States. We used to say that it was wheat was the driver. I really don't believe that at all. I think corn is the driver. And so we end up seeing inflationary spread across the entire spectrum.
Okay, we got to get the dairy nutritionist from the UK's perspective on inflationary costs as it relates to feedstuffs. What's happening there, Andrew?
Devastation. Milk price is static, and everything's going up in price. Protein, in particular, oil. it's a really serious situation because we're seeing sort of 15-20% increases in food costs for animals, and there's no increase of any description coming through for the farmers. So it's desperate, to be honest. Mm-hmm. The whole thing about, you shut one of your pipelines down. I think I caught the end of that. And then now your other pipeline's being raided by malware, I believe. But I've got to tell you, guys, I think we should all wake up and smell the coffee. I think that that's not going to be Russian interference at all. I think you'll find out that is a smokescreen, because people are trying to move the news story away from Arizona. I think your big news story is right in Arizona, and I think that this is a deflection.
I'm not minimizing the story in Arizona, but I'll tell you, 2 months ago, J.C. Cole, who now joins me every Wednesday, said on this program that we are heading toward a position where diesel fuel will be hard to come by this summer. And he said, point blank, get 3 years supply on hand.
Yeah.
This past week, I've had multiple people tell me, it looks like we could be in trouble on availability of diesel fuel in the coming months. I'm like, yeah. And that's not a smokescreen for Maricopa County. That's just what's happening.
Yeah.
Because we've had oil refinery around the world. We've crippled the infrastructure. We eliminate a pipeline to get to Cushing. We crippled some of the refinery capacity around the world. That all goes unnoticed. They don't even talk about that. And the critical infrastructure for energy and the conversion of oil to fuel that people can use is dangerous.
So you don't think this is orchestrated to crash the world's economy then?
Well, let me just pour some more gas on the fire. I don't know that I buy it that it was orchestrated. I just think this is what happens when you let idiots take the wheel, right? And we've kind of done that worldwide. People that just refuse to accept some of the real realities. One of them is that virtually every economy in the United States in the world is driven by energy prices. That's true in China. It's true in Russia. It's true in England. It's true in the United States. It's true in Honduras. It's true. I mean, it doesn't really matter where your economy is in scale or even health. Energy prices and the ability to actually attain energy at a reasonable and affordable rate will decide how many people are working in your country, what their wages are going to be, and what inflation is going to be in your country. You can't get away from that no matter what.
But surely, when you've got peace in the world, like we had in the Middle East up until very recently, as soon as you start tension in the Middle East, it drives the price of oil up. As soon as you start to have tension with Russia, tension with China, you're driving tension, which makes it more difficult to move the fuel around the world. And I can see, to me, I'm sorry, I think it is orchestrated, Jay. I really do. I don't fall for the idea that they're just incompetent. I think they know exactly what they're doing. Why would you come?
Maybe you're right.
You know, why would you come into power and immediately shut down a pipeline? And look what's happened since. You had what happened in Texas, and now you've got this. And I'm telling you, this is, for anybody that tells me this isn't properly thought through, I do believe this is properly thought through for the wrong reasons.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, I can't really say that you're wrong. I literally think that these people have convinced themselves, though, that there is some higher goal that they need to achieve. We shut down a pipeline literally because we were trying to placate some people that are so worried about the temperature of the planet in 2050 that they can't sleep at night. They're concerned that somebody in Omaha, Nebraska will use a plastic straw and it'll end up in a turtle's nose off my coast here, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And so we've just kind of lost reason with reality. And listen, this is not some new phenomenon. We stopped the reason we just finished a whole conversation about death taxes, which economically any economist will tell you is just a stupid idea. The whole government approach doesn't work. And we started, again, governments worldwide, we started just ignoring basic economic theory.
Well, not only that.
Basic economic reason.
Not only that, Jay, it kills your own country's entrepreneurialism because
sure
it makes you less competitive against those up in emerging countries because they've got lower land values, lower taxes, lower labor costs, and all you're doing is increasing the chances of your own businesses to fail. It's absolutely obvious. You don't even need to be an economist to work it out. And I'm watching this and I'm thinking, no, they're not stupid. Somebody thinks that bankrupting the world economy is the way forward. And you hear it time and time again when people poo-poo it. But the more we hear it, these three words I keep hearing, Justin Trudeau, Beijing Biden, Merkel.
Build back better.
Build back better. Those are the words. Yeah. Davos, that's Tony Evil Blair and George Soros. This is the Great Reset, folks. Mm-hmm. And people think it's not, and it is.
It is also time for me to say that if you're interested in adding value to your beef cattle operation to try to compensate for these higher taxes, that's the answer. You have to add more value. Lone Creek Cattle Company is assisting cattlemen in the Great Plains of America to get that accomplished. It's all with the Piedmontese cattle because the Piedmontese cattle possess the myostatin gene, which allows for a more tender beef experience. I can give you the science about that. It all goes back to United States Meat Animal Research Center at Clay Center, Nebraska. But what it means for you, the cattlemen, is you get paid more for the quality of product that you produce, tender beef. Get more details from Marlin Will by going to the website, LoneCreekCattleCo.com. Now go to the website and find Marlin. Don't just call the number there. I'll help you if you need help. Back to the last segment of Rural Ride after this. Welcome back. Rural Route rumbling along here. Trent Luce, Jay Truitt, Andrew Henderson with a big old Scottish smile. I'm glad we've at least found one topic where Warren Tungate in Brown County, Texas can get his favorite saying in. Right. Solution's easy.
Yeah.
Short trees, tall ropes. Well, not what he says, by the way. But, you know, I think it's worthy here. We can all see, not all of us, most of us see the challenges. But the real question is, what do we do about it? Andrew, you're first. What do we do about these challenges that trying to cripple the global economy and the shortage of fuel? We don't really realize how dependent on fuel we have become. And in the United States, we've done a marvelous job at creating our own fuel independence. So we weren't dependent upon the Middle East anymore. And that's part of why it's being crippled. So, Andrew, what's the real answer?
Well, the real answer is to strike positive relationships of mutually benefited between countries. It's to actually reach out to the strengths of one country with the strengths of another. It's not the globalist agenda. The real way forward is to buy things from, let's look at, take an example, is to buy things that are inconsequentially French from the French, for them to buy things that are really good from the UK, for us to buy and sell things with you that are really good from the USA in terms of raw materials, food, etc. Really, we need to develop the strengths of individual nations. And that's the future, because then everybody prospers within that format. What's happening at the moment is it's trying to break down no borders, have a completely movable workforce, and it always going to penalize the more developed countries. And that's my view. It's killing
everything. I don't disagree with you, Andrew, but what's happening currently in North America is not part of that solution, because you have Canada to the north. You can't even cross it unless you have some dire situation. And then meanwhile, and from the south, we're trying to encourage as many people to come in as possible.
Who
logically thinks that's okay?
Yeah, well, NBC, you're one of your media outlets. I just look at the headlines. They are reporting that Beijing Biden has a 63% approval rating. Now, not only is that just pure and utter yellow rag propaganda, it's actually the reverse of that, at least, because all I can see is conflict in your country at the moment between people questioning everything that's going on. And, you know, the idea that you've got Mr. Fauci with two masks on, and yet anybody can come across one border without being tested for COVID. They don't even have to prove now that the children that they're bringing in are actually relatives of them. So they're encouraging child trafficking. And all this is getting known here in the UK. So if we know it here in the UK, surely the majority know it.
If you know it in the UK, then everybody knows it, because you fellas are the last to find out everything.
Yeah. I'm going to have to say this. You're laughing, but I'll tell you something, right? This will surprise you. Everybody that I speak to in the UK at the moment still thinks, and I'm going to say this to you, this will frighten you, that in general, Biden is really well.
There goes Mr. Censored again. That reminds me of my first. Yeah, you're not good again, Andrew. But it reminds me of my trips to Australia, Jay. Yeah, went the first time in 2012, the last time in 2015. Went five different times during that period of 4 years. And when I would tell them what the United States really thought of Barack Obama, they're like, we thought everybody liked Barack Obama.
Right.
We're told everybody loves him.
Yep.
Yeah. We've been – so I sit here and I was just listening to the conversation, and it occurred to me – and I listen, for people that know me very well know this is like kind of one of my pet peeves, but I started down this long path, you know, as a journalist myself. And one of my degrees is actually in that generic area. And so that's what I thought I was going to be for my whole life. And I kind of became disillusioned with the press when I was in the media, and it was a lot more fair and balanced then than it is now, right? That was 30 years ago, so it's a long time. But it's just amazing how hard and difficult it has become to get honest, just honest information through almost any source, right? Everything is kind of skewed a little bit. And I take as many shots at Sean Hannity as I do at, you name any one of the 10,000 on the far left, because I don't really want somebody to try to defend a political party when they're providing information to me. Let me have just the information. Let me be able to make a reasonable decision based on real facts, and I'll decide which party best fits that. Let's put the party after the information instead of beforehand. Don't filter it through. But man, we have completely lost the ability to really gather information easily. And you would have thought with the advent of the internet that all this was going to get better, and it didn't. It got worse, and it got triggered. There's a lot of reasons we could all say that happened, and a lot of people that we can blame. But at the end of the day, the result is still the same. We just don't have that. We don't have it. And again, our government leaders don't use, they use news reports, which we all know are crap, period. Just crap from the beginning to the end. And so we have public policy being developed off of that. And it used to be that we had some cornerstones in rural America that would kind of offset those. And at least people in rural America could read, you know, those handful of independent newspapers or the big clear channel radio stations, you know, that would just kind of blurt out the facts.
Andrew, you want a little bit of interesting history and trivia?
Go on.
Jay and I met when he was in the journalism business, and the only time I ever threatened anybody with legal action was Jay Truitt. He had a client. He was strong arm me. He had a client. I actually, in Kelly and I in 1995 trademarked a hybrid gilt. It was a Spot York Cross, and we trademarked it as a spotlight. And somebody told me that Jay Truitt, on his radio station, not to be named, was advertising spotlight gilts. Well, they only come from one source. So I called this guy, this Jay Truitt, and I said, I understand you're using my trademark on your station. He fixed it.
Yeah, they fixed it. I didn't really fix it. To be honest with you, I just passed the buck to another.
Do you know what's really interesting in the UK? And this will interest both of you. The BBC has become the political arm of the Labour Party.
Yeah.
Which is our equivalent to the Democrats.
Or is it vice versa?
Pardon?
Is it vice versa? Is the Labour Party the political arm of the BBC? I'm concerned.
Very good. Okay, sorry. That's a good point. I actually couldn't honestly answer that. I'd like to go a bit deeper, but they're both joined at the hip, okay? But what's interesting is that it's totally transparent, and the BBC is losing hundreds of thousands of people are not paying their supposedly mandatory annual fees, but also the Labour Party is finished in the UK.
Yeah.
The wokeism, the Black Lives Matter that came from America, it's completely killed the BBC and the Labour Party in our elections last week. The Labour Party had a shocking result in the general election, and they've just had an even worse result in the local elections because people see right through them. Now, that's interesting because we don't have, because even Sky News and ITV were our other, we don't have a Fox News. We don't have a right-wing media. And yet, everybody's voting for the centre-right. They've all realised it's propaganda. The bit that I don't understand is that Americans, it seems to me, and you might tell me I'm wrong, but there's still a proportion of Americans who don't realize that CNN are lying through their teeth to them. There's still quite a large
let me just make an observation, Andrew, and I think it's applicable in both countries, probably every country in the world. You just described why people are leaving the BBC. You described how people are leery in the UK of everything they get from the UK. And yet, when it comes to what they hear from the US, they turn to CNN to get information about what's going on with Biden.
Yeah, and plus the fact that they're told that Fox News is Trump's channel. They're told
they're not even right wing anymore.
Yeah.
No, but this is what I'm saying is that they don't believe the BBC here, but they do believe the BBC when they report on America. It's really weird. You're right. You're absolutely right. But it is very, as far as we're concerned, there is nothing of anything contentious going on in America at the moment. You voted for Joe Biden. The Maricopa audit, the Georgia audit, the
Michigan,
Hampshire, New Hampshire audit, they're not even in the news.
Yeah.
But social media has picked up on it. That's the interesting thing. And it's Telegram. And because so many people are being pushed off social media, this is the funny thing. It's making people go, well, why are all these people disappearing from social media? And that's what's driving it, because people are realizing censorship is happening in the UK for the first time that we can see it. I'm not saying it hasn't happened before, but it's very obvious now that we can see it. And of course, what's interesting is that we have a centre-right government, and our government can see it too. So it's very interesting, because we are seeing now people within the UK like me that are seeing the full picture, and especially your border crisis, which I think, if it was under Trump, would be 24/7 main news in the UK.
Correct.
24/7. Now, yeah. Not even mentioned.
Yeah.
And it just shows you how political the media has become.
Jay Truitt, last 30 seconds.
No, I think that says it all, right? We've lost a really valuable asset in the United States, and that is our generic news media that used to be one of those kind of tools. I consider them all to be political action committees today.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I don't really even look at them as any differently than I would if I was reading a press release from the Democratic National Committee or the Republican National Committee. And I encourage other people to do the same, right? We're going to have to find information from some other source, and you're going to have to create that and look at it for it. It's going to be harder to be a citizen in the future. And you can either be really pissed off about that, or you can suck it up and do it.
Well, Project Veritas, and I know I've got 30, you've got 10 seconds or whatever it is. Project Veritas and even the Steve Bannon War Room on America's One Voice platform, I'm beginning to think that they probably have a huge audience worldwide. Because a lot of people know what's happening on that station, and it's really, really brilliant. Because, you know, it isn't as right-wing as people make out at all.
That will do it. We've successfully journeyed down the road connecting rural and urban America. All three of us remind you that all roads do lead to a rural route.